Welcome to Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm joined, as always, by Bill Bergoli.
Hello there.
Bill McCuddy is off this week, but instead we have our friend from Collider, Perry Nemiroff. There you go. We're going to talk about a lot of things this week. I'm going to start off talking about a movie that we're not going to talk about, which is Independence Day Resurgence. Why? Because we taped this podcast on a Tuesday, and they have not made this movie available for critics. What does that tell you about the quality of this movie? I think it says that this movie is going to be a piece of crap. What do you think, Perry?
I mean, yeah, that is normally what that would suggest, but I am so, so excited for that movie that I am not going to let it kill my hopes. I don't know. I just hope it's good. It's going to break my heart if it's not good, because I'm so obsessed with the 1996 original.
Really?
Oh my God. I grew up watching that over and over and over again, and still do it.
How old were you in 1996?
I was 10.
Wow.
I mean, I was the perfect age for that kind of movie, where it's big aliens and Will Smith and his big personality. I love that.
I hated the movie, but 10 years old, you're excusable because you're seeing it from a different lens. What did you think of the original movie?
I thought it was fun, but that was about it.
Okay, here's what I hated about the original movie. I don't like Roland Emmerich movies. I don't like Godzilla. I don't like The Day After Tomorrow. He has very short character development, very low narrative storyline. And what he has is very big on big budgets and special effects. Now, the special effects did not blow me away 20 years ago. They're even less impressive today. Bill Pullman, as the president of the United States, deciding to pilot his own jet to, like, kill the aliens. I mean, it's so silly. It's so stupid. I mean, am I supposed to take any of this seriously?
No, and that's the point. You're supposed to have fun with it.
I did not have fun. The new one is also directed by Roland Emmerich, so I do not – I think it's going to be more of the same. But a lot of people seem to like the original. I think that the studio is smart not screening it for critics because it'll probably get panned, but I don't think it's going to – I think it's critic-proof. So the same on the other end of the coin, it doesn't matter that they're not screening it for critics because people will go to see it regardless.
I'm going to go see it Thursday night and pay to see it.
Are you really?
That way I can review it on the air on Friday. Yeah.
No Will Smith.
I bought my ticket already.
Really?
We have no Will Smith.
That's fine.
Bill Pullman's back, right?
Well, I'm happy that they got Bill Pullman.
They got Jeff Goldblum.
They got Jeff Goldblum. I mean, those two are key enough, and they've written out Will Smith's character in the story, so at least it'll make sense.
All right, so here's what we're talking about this week. We're going to talk about a new movie that's on demand and on DVD. I believe it's on DVD. If it's not on DVD, it's definitely on demand. As we say every week, this show is an after show to a television show that we do on New York One in New York City and nationally on Time Warner Cable, soon to be Spectrum.
So I don't have to pay my Time Warner bill? I can wait until they change
Charter Communications.
Do you know what I have in L.A.?
Oh, really? Okay.
I'm already on board.
So The Phenom, we're going to talk about this movie, The Phenom, and I'll tell you about it. It's about Ethan Hawke stars, and so does a guy by the name of Johnny Simmons. Johnny Simmons is sent down to the minors in the baseball world because his pitching is not, he seems to be distracted. Take it from here, Perry. Why don't you pick it up?
Johnny Simmons plays a character named Hopper, and he's an all-star baseball player in high school, and he goes to the major leagues after that, and the movie kind of opens with him on the mound and losing his focus, and it's about his relationship with his father and his interaction with his therapist, who's played by Paul Giamatti, and kind of how he's trying to get back to what he was so good at in school. And it focuses a lot on the coolest thing about the movie is how it really gets inside the head of a pitcher and just an athlete in general. How much of that isn't just about your physical ability. It's about your ability to keep focused and how much your mentality is part of the game as well.
It is not a sports film, I'm going to warn you. It's a psychological indie drama set against the world of baseball. And as you said, it's really about this kid who's has an abusive father, played by Ethan Hawke, who I think is tremendous because you never see Ethan Hawke playing this kind of role. I mean, he's this real bastard, abusive, a control freak. And he also has a prison record, and wakes his kid up at like 3:30 in the morning to do laps around the neighborhood. And it's all about control, I think, more than just trying to turn his kid into a star athlete. I liked Johnny Simmons. I liked Ethan Hawke. It was interesting to see Paul Giamatti in a baseball film, considering that his father was Bart Giamatti, the late commissioner of Major League Baseball. You had issues with the ending of the movie, Perry. I know that. I kind of liked the ending. I didn't like it when it was when I was watching it. I thought it just ended abruptly. I'm like, this is the end of the movie? What kind of nonsense is this? But then I started thinking about it. I'm not going to give it away. And I think that the ending lends a lot of insight into the relationship and the dynamic between the father and the son relationship. It gives you food for thought. It's not a nicely tied up in a little Hollywood bow for you.
I think I feel so strongly about the ending because I found the rest of the movie so engrossing, and I became really attached to that character and seeing where this journey took him, and the fact that it ends abruptly left me cold and wanting more, and not in the best way.
But if you think about it, and again, I can't give this away. I did not like the ending when I saw it, and as I said, I started thinking about it without giving it away. It might seem to end abruptly, but it really wraps everything up for you. Think about it. It's years later. He's kind of Ethan Hawke's reaction, and I don't want to say anymore. It's really kind of giving you closure to the whole story in a way.
I guess.
In an avant-garde artsy way, it's giving you
it's a
giving
very
you closure.
Fair argument. I just found it unsatisfying.
Okay, I can accept that. I gave it thought, and it became less unsatisfying to me as I went along. All right, new on, as I said, so this is an after show, and we talk about all the movies that are on demand and are on DVD, and one of those movies is Zootopia, which made a lot of money for Disney.
It's one of my favorite movies this year. When I think back, we're 6 months into it. So far, my favorite movie has been this animated Disney, not Pixar, but Disney animated movie. And it's really, when you think about it, about racial profiling.
It's about discrimination. It's about tolerance and acceptance.
And yet, it's so much fun.
And you have that whole angle of it wrapped into this whole anyone can achieve their dreams. Like, if you believe, you can do it. So it's very kid-friendly while also having that extra layer for
adults.
Well,
it's about living your dreams, like you said. It's about not letting people put you down. But it's not like, you know, I want to be, it's living your dreams because, like you said, racial profiling, because of, it's a little disguised message of, right, because of who I am, people are not going to let me live my dreams. It's not like there's a, you know, somebody that, oh, this is an impossible goal to reach for some
it's
other
not like
reason.
An underdog sports movie.
Right. This is about like I can't. People are telling me I can't live my dreams because, you know, in this particular case, I'm a bunny rabbit, and bunny rabbits are not allowed to be law enforcement officials in this particular movie, which you could equate to like I'm of this particular race, and nobody's been, risen to this level because there's never been a Jew who's been president. I should not try to do that or something like that. As a Jew, I guess I can say that. But I mean that's the underlying thing is don't.
And yet they play with that too when they have the sloths when they're moving so slowly.
You know, I thought that they had ruined that scene because they were showing it before movies as some sort of preview, not necessarily a trailer. But they had played it so much and highlighted it in trailers so much that I thought it wasn't going to be funny anymore in the movie. So funny.
Well, Perry, tell everybody briefly who hasn't seen it, like in a sense or two, what the movie is about.
So the main character in the movie is Judy Hopps. She's a bunny, and most bunnies grow up to become carrot farmers, but she wants to move to the big city, which is Zootopia, and become the first bunny cop there. And it's all about how, you know, she gets to the police academy, she's top of her class, but people still aren't taking her seriously as a cop. So she has to team up with a fox who's voiced by
Jason Bateman.
Thank you. Jason Bateman, and the two of them crack a conspiracy case together, or try to crack one in order to, you know, get her to prove herself to her superiors. And yeah.
Played by Idris Elba, the superior.
This is a top-notch voice cast. I always talk about how unusual it is sometimes how animated movies have to load up their cast with famous faces, because I get big names draw a crowd, but at the same time, you know, you want the best voice for the character. This, to me, is the perfect balance between finding famous faces to promote your movie and also perfectly casting their voices.
Because Jennifer Goodwin is not a huge name.
See, I don't think people go...
She's got quite the following because of Once Upon a Time, and she's done a lot of movies.
Not like a Saturday Night Live person that they're always dragging in.
Well, Byron Howard co-wrote and co-directed this movie, and he also did Bolt.
Right.
With John Travolta as the dog that had superpowers and... That's one of my favorite animated films, so this guy knows what he's doing. But I don't think that people go to animated movies because of the voices. I don't think, you know, Finding Dory made a lot of money last weekend, and you know, I don't think people, I think people just loved Finding Nemo and wanted to go back and see where the characters were doing. I think you could put Brad Pitt, you know, Angelina Jolie, Ryan Gosling, and, you know, Beyonce as voices in a cartoon, and I don't think people are going to run to see the cartoon based on the voices.
I don't think they're running to the movie because I want to hear Brad Pitt voice a dog in this movie or something like that. I think it's just more, you know, putting A-list cast members, like Ellen, for example, having her show as a platform to support the movie, it's kind of free promotion in a way.
I enjoyed listening to Albert Brooks in Finding Dory, but, you know, it was, I don't think it would have affected the box office that much if, do you think it would have affected the box office if Ellen DeGeneres decided that she did not want to reprise the role, reprise or reprise? I always get that mixed up.
Yes, because is it reprise? I think it's reprise. Would have gotten made without her.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, they had another voice instead of Ellen DeGeneres playing Dory, do you think the movie would have made, you know, the sound alike?
There are professional voice actors whose names we do not know who are very good at that sort of
thing. Chuck Jones, who did all the Warner Brothers cartoons.
You're thinking Mel Blanc.
I'm sorry. Mel Blanc, the man of a thousand voices, who on his tombstone says, "That's all, folks," which is kind of funny. Right. When he died, other people started doing the voices of Bugs Bunny and Porky Pig and Daffy Duck and, you know. So, I don't know. There are, yeah. Well, anyway, my point is that I like Zootopia, if that's a point that I'm trying to make at all. It's, I think the best animated films work on two levels, one for grown-ups and one for kids. And there's a whole bunch of, the kids will love this movie, but there's a whole
grown-up wise, especially if you're media savvy at all, there are so many references. There's a Breaking Bad scene.
There's a parody of The Godfather. There's like we said, the sloths at the DMV moving so slowly. That's very funny. There's all this stuff that to completely kids, little kids won't get, but they'll still love the movie on its, you know, for its basic, you know, premise. But adults will go, "Oh, that's funny. That's Breaking Bad. Oh, that's funny. That's this." And I like that. And, you know, and the message is a good one. You know, I like the movie. And the animation's good, too.
Oh, the animation's fantastic. Big, bright colors. And the world building in this is spot on, too. So it's a lot of fun places within Zootopia. A lot of really colorful characters in the mix. I mean, I guarantee you if a kid goes to see this, they're going to want a toy of every single character.
What a year for Disney. My God. Yeah. They're making just between Dory and Zootopia and all the
Moana's
Marvel stuff.
Too.
What is?
Moana.
Yes, and all the Marvel films, you know, be it the Avengers. And
throw in Star Wars, too.
And Star Wars. I mean, this
car. It's a Disney-dominated industry.
It's a Disney-dominated industry. Absolutely true.
I'm fine by that because it's all quality stuff, too.
Well, when is that terrible? It looks terrible. The latest Pirates of the Caribbean. That's Disney. When is that?
I don't know. That's not really on my radar.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, anyway, Knight of Cups is a movie I hated. And,
tell us how
that's
you feel,
coming
Neil.
Out on DVD and on demand.
Jump right into that one, why don't
and it's Terrence Malick, who did Badlands.
Oh, that explains
and,
a lot.
Tree of Life and all these movies.
Slow movies.
And this movie is just it looks beautiful. And, it's rare to find a movie that looks beautiful and is unwatchable. And this is an unwatchable mess of a movie. And, you know, somebody tell us, you know, Perry, tell
I have to tell what this movie is about?
All right.
It's really challenging. I mean, I know the basic plot points and the characters and what they're up to, but this is a movie without a story, much of a story at least, or a story in the traditional sense.
Yes, there's much of a story. It's Christian Bale is this writer in Hollywood who walks around back lots of studios and you kind of see his adventures with six different women, and it's a huge cast. It's Christian Bale and Cate Blanchett and Natalie Portman and Antonio Banderas is in it, and the cast is wasted. It's unwatchable. There's no narrative that I really am interested in whatsoever. It's a waste of talent. How do I really feel about this, Neil? You know, there's a pretentious voiceover narration in the thing. Was anybody interested on screen on what was going on with the Christian Bale character? I mean, I certainly wasn't. But, you know, Terrence Malick went away for 20 years. From 1978 to 1998, he did not make one single movie. Now he's churning out movies on a regular basis, and I say that if you're going to churn out, you know, crap like this, do not do You know, I'd rather you don't do any movies at all. Just go away. This was just awful. And that's my last. And you agree, Perry?
I definitely
And I know you
agree.
Didn't see it, Bill.
Yeah, no, I'm glad
saving,
I didn't see
I'm
it.
I'm saving you time and money. All right, Anton Yelchin died. That's pretty sad, huh? You know?
Incredibly sad.
And what a way to die. I mean, he was run over by his own car. What were you telling me, Bill?
Well, that model Jeep Cherokee has been recalled because it has a very vague shift lever, and you don't know if you're in neutral or not. So it could well be that he parked it. Maybe the thing moved itself. Chrysler, which owns Jeep, has said, don't jump to conclusions, but you don't know. Jalopnik and a lot
of
the...
Chrysler is going to say that. I mean, if they
yeah,
own Jeep, what are they going to just say, yeah, we've got to fix that. We mea culpa. They're not going to do that, you know?
Well, you don't know if that his particular car was recalled, but they'll look into it, and I'm sure someone will find that out. But
terrible
all that
waste
said,
of life, too.
Yeah, he was only 27.
He was so talented, had so much promise. I mean, he had already made so many great films and had, like, everything kind of at his door for the future, too. And he was such a kind person. I've encountered him for interviews a number of times.
Yeah, you interviewed him recently, right?
I just interviewed him at the end of April for the movie Green Room, which is still my number one movie of the year, and he is so good in it. But I've been a big fan of his since he was in Alpha Dog. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but he was so good in that movie. And no matter what movie he's been in over the years, whether it's, you know, the greatest film ever or it's just so-so, he always delivers great work. He's the kind of actor who is picking really big roles in movies like Star Trek and things like that. But he also picked really unique ones. He was working with up-and-coming directors. He was just such an all-around actor, really great talent, really nice person. This is just the saddest thing.
It is sad, you know, and he has that Star Trek movie coming out. When's that coming out?
Comes out this summer, in July.
Yeah, so that'll be kind of watching that. Are you a Star Trek fan, Perry?
In the middle. I'm a bigger Star Wars fan than Star Trek fan, but I'm looking forward to the movie.
So what do you make of the Star Wars thing, Perry, with now there's going to be like a Star Wars movie every year for like eternity, basically.
I can watch Star Wars day and night. Right now, while I'm waiting for Rogue One, I'm busy catching up on the Disney shows. I'm catching up on Star Wars Rebels, the animated show. And after I finish Rebels, I'm going to watch Clone Wars. And then I get to go to Star Wars Celebration in July in London. And I am just so, so excited.
Now, we're doing a podcast here. You can't see us. But I have to tell you, go to a tweet out a picture, Perry. Perry, as nerdy as this sounds, is a very lovely-looking person.
She doesn't look nerdish.
No, she does not look nerdy at all, you know? So,
it's because I don't wear all my movie T-shirts when I come on the show. Because I got to dress like a lady.
No, you do not look nerdy on any. What about you, Bill? What do you?
Well,
think
I got a movie I can talk about.
Yeah.
I saw Free State of Jones, which
the Matthew McConaughey movie.
That's right, Matthew McConaughey.
Before we talk about that, I'd like to talk about these Matthew McConaughey Lincoln commercials, you know? I mean, if you watch Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, the late Gary Shandling and Jerry Seinfeld did a parody of the Matthew McConaughey Lincoln commercials, which was very, very funny. But there's a recent one that I caught the other day where he goes, I used to drive a Lincoln back in the day before they paid me to drive a Lincoln, not because it was cool, I just liked it. Now, is that complete bullshit? You think this guy really drove a Lincoln before, you know?
You know,
like,
some people have bad taste in cars. Some people like driving a land yacht.
I don't know. Well, tell me about Free State of
Jones.
Well,
it's based on a true story about a little-known guy named Nat Newton. He was a Confederate soldier for a while until he decided to desert and rebel, and he led a rebellion with a group of freed slaves. And it had repercussions. There's some jumping back and forth in the movie between the 1860s and the 1940s when his son actually went, or his grandson, I think it was, went on trial. But it was directed by Gary Ross, who did the very first Hunger Games movie. And the action moves very well. The problem I had with it was that it knew it was telling an important story and a historical story, and it kind of wanted to check off, this happened during the South, this happened during Reconstruction, this happened during Reconstruction, we have this issue and this issue, and it kind of forgets that it's got to tell a story and get you caught up in the characters. That said, Matthew McConaughey is nice in the saintly white guy role. He does very well at that.
Yeah, everything in the movie, I think, was really well done, well acted, well shot, well intentioned, but there was definitely a disconnect between the viewer and the characters that made it a little tough to really appreciate the story that Gary Ross was telling. And he did so. I think he did something like 10 years worth of research. And
there's actually a website you can go to, which you have to look up because I don't have it at hand, where they published footnotes for the movie.
Oh, interesting.
So what you're saying?
Really hard. Like went to universities, and I mean, this project was his baby for many, many years, and you definitely see it in the film. All the time and energy he put into it.
You didn't get caught up either.
Yeah, I mean, something. It's hard to explain the problem with this movie, but the most basic way I can say it is something didn't quite click or hit home like it should have with this kind of material.
Well, I actually have some sound because I have Matthew McConaughey saying how his character was a man of action.
He never worried about the consequences. He may have considered them, but he would never not right or wrong on behalf of the consequences being too tough. Didn't matter. Didn't matter how small of a task and how great the consequences might be. He couldn't live with an injustice or seeing somebody not being treated fairly.
But again, historical accuracy doesn't always make for an entertaining film. But really, I do recommend this. It's fun to watch.
Would you recommend it?
I don't know if I can okay. recommend this. It's very slow, and I was looking at my watch a little more than I would have liked to. But, you know, good for him making this movie and making it the way he wanted to make it. And I kind of like the passion behind it.
So, you know, we were talking earlier about The Phenom, which is not a baseball film, although it's set against the backdrop of the baseball world. What is your favorite baseball or sports movie of all time, Perry?
A League of Their Own.
A League of Their Own is my favorite sports movie of all time.
Movie.
I love that movie.
There's
I love Gina Davis. I love Lori Petty. I love Tom Hanks. Penny Marshall, an amazing job. Plus, it's just that. Now, there's a movie that's historically interesting. Most people don't know about the all-women's baseball league that was created in, you know, during World War II because a lot of the star players were all fighting the war. And Gary Marshall plays this guy that's supposed to be, I guess, Wrigley, but he's another candy bar guy. And David Strathairn is in it. It is just terrific, and it's based in truth. And that ending, when they go to the Baseball Hall of Fame up in Cooperstown, and they actually honor the women of the what's it? There was a name for it. It's the All Women.
All American Women's Baseball League.
I love that movie, and then the actual you see the actual women that they're now in their like 80s, but they come to Cooperstown. Do you like that movie?
I liked it. But you were talking about favorites. It probably is one of my favorites. I have a favorite scene in a sports movie, which is actually in Bull Durham, where two of the characters tell each other, a veteran player tells a rookie player how to talk during interviews and how to use baseball cliches.
Oh, that's great.
That's a great scene.
That's great. Kevin Costa giving advice to Tim Robbins.
Yeah.
That's good. There's a lot of good. I mean, Rudy is a really good film in terms of just pushing your emotions. The original Rocky I happen to like very, very much.
I'm a 90s kid, so The Sandlot is also an all-time favorite.
Do you know what Gary Marshall, who's in A League of Their Own, what his favorite sports movie is? Pride of the Yankees with Gary Cooper.
A good recent sports movie that I think was just overlooked is Rush, the racing movie from Ron Howard.
Oh, yeah, that was really well done. I kind of grew up watching those guys race. I was surprised
that movie didn't get as much attention as I thought it deserved.
It did get an Oscar nomination for...
It got nominated for something, but I think they were...
Best Supporting Actor.
They were definitely playing it as though it was going to get nominated for everything, and then I think it just got steamrolled by whatever else came out at that time of year.
Yeah.
What's the movie with Kevin Costner where he's the sport... is it trading? It's the draft...
Draft Day.
Draft Day is a very interesting film that gives insight into the...
The way they edited it, you didn't have to watch a whole lot of football if you weren't into football because it was more
about
the dealings
about
behind
football,
the scenes. Yeah.
Like, enjoyed the movie. Yeah. You know, I think that's a good movie, too. But it's amazing that you came up with all the sports movies that are out there, and there are hundreds of them.
And there's one recently, I think it just came out on DVD not too long ago, was Eddie the Eagle, which we... all kind of
you liked Eddie the Eagle?
I liked Eddie the Eagle.
No, I didn't care for Eddie the Eagle.
That's one of my favorite movies of the year so far. Really? I walked out of that so happy and felt so good and positive. I mean, really, that movie is, you know, a super cheesy sports movie, and you know exactly where it's going to end up. But that's why we have feel-good sports movies, because you walk out feeling great. I think we need more things like that.
Did you like Hoosiers? I was never a huge fan of Hoosiers. People seem to love that movie.
No, Gene Hackman. That big shot in the end,
I'm fine with it. I've watched it a couple times.
I don't know.
It's not one of my go-tos.
I don't know. I took a date there many, many years ago when it came out, and she didn't like basketball and kind of ruined the tone of the date. So,
the original Rocky movie was my second date with the woman I eventually met.
Which movie?
The original Rocky movie, which shows how long ago I was out a courting.
Would you say Raging? Would you put Raging Bull as a sports movie? Would you consider that a sports movie?
Yeah.
Okay, because that would be probably one of the greatest sports movies. If you would call that a sports movie, that would probably be one of the greatest sports movies of all time.
Yeah.
Anything else today we want to talk about?
I think that's it, Neil. What do we got next week?
What do we got next week? We're going to talk about the new Steven Spielberg movie, the BFG, which, have you seen that yet, Bill? I've seen it.
I haven't. I heard it's slow.
I'm not going to tip off my opinion. Perry has seen it, too.
I have not seen it.
Oh, you have not seen it.
It's coming up, though. My screening's coming up.
Oh, I've seen it. So you have to listen to next week's podcast to get my opinion. And so we're talking about the BFG. We're going to talk about a movie called September of Shiraz, and we're going to talk about, what is that movie that you saw twice, Perry?
Oh, Carnage Park.
We're going to talk about Carnage Park.
Yeah, I'm jealous that I'm not going to be on that show. I'm a big fan of the director, Mickey Keating, and I think Carnage Park is probably one of his best films yet.
And it's a horror thing, right?
It is.
Yeah, well, that's your
thing. That's why she likes it.
I know.
That's why she likes it.
This is good. I mean, I feel like I probably wouldn't suggest Keating's other films to people who are not that into the genre. This, to me, has the best crossover potential.
Before we go, Star Wars will probably be the biggest grossing film of the year. But this summer, is there anything – we're going to put Star Wars aside. We'll say the second highest grossing film. Is there anything you think that's going to come out this summer that we haven't seen yet? That will be the second biggest grossing movie of the year, or the biggest grossing movie of the summer.
Well, the summer, I feel like it might have already come out and be Civil War, but I mean, Finding Dory is clearly huge. Independence Day Resurgence.
I don't think that's going to do it.
I think it's a toss-up. I mean, I was kind of in the same line of thinking last year when Jurassic World came out, and that was a smash hit, so perhaps it could follow that line. And I don't think it would be as big, but it could be big. And we also have Suicide Squad in August.
That's what I was going to ask you about, yeah.
So
that just got awarded a PG-13 rating.
So it's squeaky clean.
And Suicide Squad, the fact that they're releasing it in August, you know, don't the real big money earners come out like in, you know, now they're starting the summer season, like not even starting it around Memorial Day. They started like, you know, like the end of March, beginning of April. It's like it's the first summer release.
Yeah, that's right.
I feel like there's a lot of movies out there that have kind of broken the mold. Even in when you look in January, there's a couple big money makers now that come out in January. And when you're looking at that first week in August, I think 2 years ago when we had Guardians of the Galaxy come out.
In Zootopia, wasn't that April?
But they didn't expect Guardians of the Galaxy.
Last year, Ninja Turtles did really well. And I think it's, or was it whatever year it came out? Whatever year that was, Ninja Turtles did really well in an August slot, and I feel like it's because it came out in August, whereas Out of the Shadows, the second one, came out in June, where it's a packed month where there's more pressure, and I feel like that's why that one didn't do as well.
We're also going to talk about The Shallows next week with Blake Lively.
Jealous yet again.
Yeah, so there you go. So it'll be a jam-packed week. Well, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. For Bill Bregoli.
Yes.
Perry Nemiroff.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's it. I caught you off guard there. And Neil Rosen. Bill McCuddy will not be back next week, 2 weeks from
now. But as Bill says, almost says, we watch the bad movies because we watch them for free, or something like that.
Bill McCuddy says, we watch the bad movies. I'll do it in my Bill McCuddy voice. We watch the bad movies so you don't have to. That's what he says, and that's what we do here. And we'll see you next week on Sitting Around Talking Movies. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us.